Okay, welcome back. If you take a moment and bring up the home page, and let's go to the top where it says Tonight's Guests, you know where it is, right on the left, and click on that, and we're going to go right to it, and you'll see Walter Wilkinson is back with us tonight. There is a book, a phenomenal book, which actually tells the truth about what this government did to its people. It's not the only time this government has acted against the American people in a very direct and, in this case, fatal fashion. This is no joke. The book is called The Last Wave from Port Chicago. Now, that's a place in the eastern San Francisco Bay, I don't know, 30 miles or something across the bay. And it was a place during World War II that American naval ships would come in and dock and be loaded with the munitions of war, artillery rounds, ammunition for small arms, you name it. And then they'd transit the Pacific and bring it to the staging areas of the Islands campaign that we really didn't need to do. We could have starved them all out. At any rate, that's what was done. Now, at one point at Port Chicago, well, we're going to let Walter tell the story, but something happened here, something that is so unbelievable that very few people ever talked about it. I think they were quite afraid. Obviously, there were threats made to keep a lid on this, but it's really simple to sum it up. We had developed an atomic bomb a year before the first test at Trinity. And that atomic bomb, or one very much like it, a test prototype, was ignited, was triggered, and exploded at Port Chicago in San Francisco Bay. If you think about it, it sounds ridiculous. It can't be. It's not possible. Well, Peter Vogel wrote the book, The Last Wave from Port Chicago. And fortunately, Walter came along and updated the book, upgraded it, and has made it available now for all of you for free. All you have to do is look underneath Walter Wilkinson's name, and you'll see animated 3D flip book. That's a version of having the chance to go through it and read it, or a regular PDF. You can read it either fashion, either format. It is a story that will leave you shaking your head in disbelief, but it's all true. It happened. Peter Vogel wasn't playing games, and Walter Wilkinson has done all of us a tremendous public and national patriotic service by bringing this book forward. It was almost completely gone, very few copies around, and now he has updated it and is making it available to all of you for free. Doesn't get any better than that. All right, well, I don't want to talk anymore. Let's go right to Walter Wilkinson. I believe this is Walter's fifth or sixth time on the program talking about the atomic bomb detonation at Port Chicago in San Francisco Bay. It's a phenomenal story. Welcome back, Walter.
Thank you, Jeff. How am I sounding tonight?
You sound fine. Good.
Okay. Yeah, I had three friends over for Christmas dinner.
Uh-huh.
And this publication and your show is the first national media exposure I've had. So it's a big event in my life, and none of my three friends were willing to open the link in the email I sent them because, as they put it, and this is a direct quote, we don't want to end up on some list somewhere.
Well, there's bravery, isn't it? See, that's the problem. They own us, they control us, they manipulate us, they program us through fear. That's basically the bottom line operational mechanism, and that is really a sad commentary on what I used to think of as a very brave culture and society, but not so. People are afraid. Go ahead.
Well, do you have a suggestion of where we could, what direction you want to go with this?
Yeah, let's go back and kind of start at the beginning. When did you first read Peter Vogel's book, The Last Wave from Port Chicago? How did you find a copy of it? And how many copies were still around before you acquired the one that you did? Approximately.
Well, approximately one.
That's right.
It would have been in the year 2000 that 5 years have passed. I really don't remember how I initially came to know about it. But
do you remember where you found that copy of the book, the first one?
No, that's what I was. That's what I was just.
That's what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's very interesting in and of itself. Now, I want all of you to keep in mind, again, that this book had been, I'm sure, intentionally sequestered and then made to go away. The government didn't want this book out there. And now, thanks to Walter, not only do we have it back, but it's updated and beautifully presented. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. And a thing I have to think about occasionally is, what happens to me if I succeed the way I'm hoping to? So I am the person they were doing so well, and they had come so close to erasing this from both the book and the author, and especially the movie version, which we'll talk a little bit about. But
right.
I'm the one who's trying to defeat the erasure of the works of Peter Vogel and even Peter Vogel himself. From the historical record, and there is a document trail which Vogel mentions. So this isn't just a hypothesis, but there were a whole bunch of Port Chicago documents which were in U.S. government archives. And in the year 2008 or something, they never had any security classification at all up until 2008 or so.
Really? They were just sitting there. How interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they didn't care until a certain point.
Well, they figured they had it knocked. There was nobody talking about it. Nobody would believe it anyway. So I guess the paranoia wasn't sufficient to have them all classified. Go ahead. This is interesting.
Yes, but they were not only classified, but at a very high level. And I don't know the name of that, but it's only viewable now by U.S. government employees. So after caring not at all, they mm-hmm. started caring a great deal. So we know that something happened, and we can guess what happened. Around the year 2000 or so, I did see the movie version of the Port Chicago explosion.
Now, hold that thought. What Walter is talking about here, the movie version, I don't want you to think Hollywood movie version. The government was there with at least one and probably several motion picture quality cameras shooting at the time the atomic bomb was ignited. They wanted a thorough documentation of it, and they got it. And that actual film was seen by Walter. He saw it. Do you remember where it was you saw it? I know you do. I can't remember.
No, that also was 25 years ago, and unfortunately, I don't remember.
Ah, was it on television or part of a theatrical newsreel or something?
No, it was the earlier days of internet streaming media.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was actually online. Somebody uploaded it online.
Yes, Peter Vogel discovered it. And so people know it's a 1944 U.S. Navy data acquisition support movie. It's black and white. There's no audio. And only lasts a few seconds. But a very interesting logical twist here is that if you see it, and actually after the first time I mentioned it on this program, there are some people, at least one person, sent an email to you and said, I remember seeing it too. So, you know, it isn't just me who's imagining it.
No.
But Peter Vogel had a close relationship with the U.S. government archives for the Port Chicago Memorial because they saved, entire rooms full of documents because of the social and cultural and legal issues surrounding Port Chicago, not the explosion itself, but there are very important issues, including a racial dimension to it, because two-thirds of the fatalities, there are 321 fatalities, and two-thirds of them were African-Americans. So,
this is also important. This enormous blast was obviously the talk of the town. I mean, all of San Francisco saw it, probably heard it. They saw it happened. What time was it in the evening? I believe. What I'm going to say.
10:17 p.m.
I want to say 10. And okay. Right.
And in the town of Napa, which is 30 miles to the north, their local newspapers, which I consider the most reliable information source of all,
right.
You know, these little small town newspapers said at that time, the darkness of night disappeared in a moment, and there was an eerie, pure white light, which made the made it bright as high noon. But it wasn't
bright
a yellow,
as day.
Sort of,
right as day. That's what the paper reported. Phenomenal. Now, the government passed this blast off as munitions that somehow detonated while they were being loaded onto, there were two ships, I believe, docked at the port itself there, taking on ammunition. The government said it was a terribly unfortunate tragedy that happened, but these were conventional munitions. No one was talking about atomic bombs then. No one. But this so far exceeded any paradigm of a normal blast. It's not funny.
Yes, and the caller was wrong. The conventional explosions won't be at a temperature any higher than maybe 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
But an atom bomb will be more than a million. And it's a different color. It was reddish or orange or something, but we know that an atom bomb going off that's a pure white light. And so the Port Chicago explosion was a turning point in race relations in this country, but that part of it has been very well documented. So if you go to, say, history.com, and, you know, I did the experiment of just typing into Google Port Chicago explosion, and the very first place it'll take you is history.com, not surprisingly, because it has that golden URL.
Right.
And they will tell you, it gets me a little hot under the collar because it just isn't true. They say over and over again that one of the shells or something fell out of one of those rope cargo nets and caused a chain reaction, and that just isn't true. A lot of work had been done to make those conventional munitions, safer for Navy personnel to handle. So they needed to be armed before they would explode, and you would arm them in the Pacific War on the other side of the Pacific. You know, you basically waited.
These were unarmed warheads. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So they couldn't have done as the government would like everybody to believe. This had nothing to do with a typical munitions explosion. No chain reaction could have done what was seen. And when you saw the film of this, you say it was only a few seconds online. What, five seconds, 4 seconds, 10
maybe.
Seconds?
Well, but before and after, nothing is happening. And I think it's a very interesting logical twist that before something happens, nothing is happening. So you don't see any movement in the camera.
It's just black.
And, there's enough light to see the outlines of San Francisco Bay and the headlands.
Got it. Okay.
So the logical twist is that nothing is happening, but that's very, very interesting. It's one of the most interesting things because the camera was aimed right at Port Chicago, some miles away across San Francisco Bay. I don't know how many miles, but... Then you see a luminous mushroom cloud across the bay, and you see at the base, as Peter Vogel points out, there is a Wilson condensation cloud, which is a donut-shaped sort of water vapor around the base of an atom bomb, which goes off over water, because the water at the surface vaporizes in a moment, but it's forced outward from the blast at such a high velocity that it also condenses almost right away. So it forms a donut-shaped a cloud at the base.
Now, let me ask you, if I can, I just want to walk through this. You're looking at the outline barely lit with, you know, residential, commercial buildings and lighting at night, 10 o'clock at night. And then there must have been an instant flash of white,
yes.
Correct?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. And then we see the mushroom cloud later. The actual conflagration of the bomb was still enough to light up the mushroom cloud above it. Is that what we're also saying here?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. And it was clearly a mushroom cloud that you saw.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
No, forgive my redundancy. We've talked about this before, but I want people to be really clear. This wasn't just a white blast. This was a clearly defined atomic bomb explosion. 1 year, almost to the day, a one-day difference between the Trinity alleged first atomic bomb explosion. This one was done for reasons that would probably concur with the same general reasoning that caused the government or allowed the government to spray the entire perimeter of San Francisco Bay with biological agents to see how they would infect the public and track the spread of this bioweapons. This happened in 1951, 52. There are many other examples of the government testing things on American citizens without their knowledge or convenience. And many people died. There's no doubt about it. Now, at Port Chicago, 1944, probably 8 years before the 1952, I believe it was 51 or 52, San Francisco Bay spraying spree. They used boats and they went around the entire bay spraying biological agents so people would get sick with them or otherwise afflicted with them and they could track them. This was a bioweapons test. That was 8 years later. So in 1944, we had an atomic bomb lit off basically at a loading station, Port Chicago, attended to by mostly African-American sailors. They were almost all black, and they were sacrificed. This was filmed, it was recorded, and it was clearly a matter of fact. Now, the other issue is, not only were there camera crews there, probably several, filming from different locations, but a piece of this, as you've heard, got loose, and somebody put it up on the internet years and years ago. It's long gone now. There was a guest of honor, apparently, flown out to San Francisco and brought to a position in 1944 of observing the actual explosion. You want to tell us a little bit about that, what we know?
Yes, that's from the other excellent book on the subject.
Daisy Herndon.
Daisy yes. Herndon. And if you look in my 2025 edition, there are links to her work, and Peter Vogel never mentions this. So, but there's a lot of evidence that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was in the last year of his life, was there watching the Port Chicago explosion from the headlands of San Francisco Bay somewhere. In brief, you know, there's a lot of evidence pointing to that, which I'll, you know, I won't go into that right now.
Understood. That's fine. But it is there. Yeah. There is evidence. This is not just pure spec. Yeah, there is evidence.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, he did a radio broadcast from the presidential train, and the text of his radio address to the country, the first thing he says, "I am speaking to you tonight from overlooking the beautiful San Francisco Bay," and there's not the tiniest doubt that that he was there. And it is a peculiar thing for him to take a cross country trip with a world war going on. And it was the last year of his life. He was dying, and yet he didn't have the admirals and generals come to him in Washington for it's very unexpected that he would take a strike out on a cross-country trip, but we know he did that. And you said something interesting, Jeff, which was they probably had several of these cameras set up. And I had the same thought, because after the Port Chicago explosion, they could write up the central document for Peter Vogel's work, which I highlight in the 2025 edition, which has a title. There's a document from Los Alamos National Laboratory where the bomb was designed and assembled. And as a result of the Port Chicago explosion, they had an idea of what the blast radius was going to be, the safe blast radius. And in the second atomic test, which was in New Mexico, at Trinity site a year later, there were no fatalities. The famous physicists were all safely in concrete bunkers, and they knew what the safe distance was going to be because of the Port Chicago explosion. So I think it's likely that they set up multiple cameras. There was so much at stake, and much money had been spent. They would have redundancy. You know, they would have backups. But I'm guessing they had cameras closer than the one we see the movie film from, and technicians with Geiger counters, and they may have been part of the 321 fatalities because they were too close, I think I said what I was going to say. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
very good.
It's interesting that you would make that point because I thought the same thing.
No, that's kind of would be, I think, expected of something like that. But to do this and sacrifice hundreds of human beings for their test with FDR strangely in the area, we'll say that at least with certainty, and this film that you saw, do you have any recollection of any printed announcement you saw prior to the piece of film, or did it just pop up online somewhere? Do you remember? It's 25 years ago, I understand. Do you remember seeing anything about it? Was there any explanatory text or narration prior to the explosion that you saw?
Not that I remember, and it was 25 years ago, but the tidbits of information I know about that movie is that Peter Vogel himself went to the archivist and said, was there a movie of Port Chicago? And the archivist said, sure, we've got one of those. No one has ever asked before. But Vogel probably didn't tell him why he was interested, you know. So it was a very...
Excuse me, Walter, do you think Vogel got a copy of it on loan for some reason and looked at it?
He was the one who brought it to a TV station in San Francisco called KQED, and they did their technicians did the transfer from the decaying nitrate type of a film to videotape, and someone took the videotape and put it up on about an early streaming media platform, and that's how I saw it.
Fascinating. Well, okay. Go ahead. Now, let me remind everyone,
I was going to mention that we were talking about this quantum increase in the security classification of Port Chicago documents, not this specific one that I'm mentioning, but why would that happen? Well, the timeline seems to appear that the Peter Vogel's unearthing of the movie version was the thing which triggered them to 36 years after raise the classification levels. And why else would they do that? If you accept the official version of the story, it was a very unfortunate accident, and they did more with training. But if you accept that, then there really wasn't any reason for them to reclassify all those documents.
I agree. I do agree. Again, to remind you, if you go to guests and look under Walter's name, you'll see two different formats that you can look at the book, read the book, and do your own thinking about it. It is a phenomenal story put together by a man. Is Peter Vogel still alive? Do we know? I think he I thought he might be, right?
He'd be 87 years old today, but I suspect he is still alive. I've looked on obituary.com, and there are 33 people named Peter Vogel, and none of them really match the profile of him. Now, a recent discovery, however, is that in one of the chapters of The Last Ways from Port Chicago, which anyone can read if you want to look there, he mentions his son, who was 10 years old in 1980 or so, and his name is Carlo. And I'm not, this isn't a breach of confidentiality, really, because he was the one who brought up the subject, and you can read it that his son's name is Carlo Vogel, and there are a few of those, but one of them is the correct age. And that appears on one of those websites which have comprehensive databases of people who have appeared in movies, because Carlo Vogel did have, this is going to sound kind of condescending, but he had a, less than spectacular career as a movie actor. So in the IMDb, there are five or so second-rate movies where he appeared. And there's a phone number. I've got to remember to try it out. I mean, a lot of time has passed, and that phone, there's a phone number presumably for an actor's agent. So it just might be possible. It's a long shot, but maybe I can get in touch with Carlo Vogel. But Peter Vogel, he's been erased from the public domain.
Right. Well, hopefully he's listening or will be able to listen to this and take consolation that his work of a lifetime has been saved by you and edited and just presented brilliantly. If you want to look at it, you can read it anytime you want. That's a great gift to all of America. This was a very heinous and horrible thing that was done. But it's not the only example of that. We look at the COVID vaccinations, for example. How many billions will eventually die from that in time? We don't know. But we know that probably hundreds of millions have died already around the world. No joke. And we think a lot of people have died here in this country. So this government does not place its people as its most important and precious resource. It uses and abuses our people, all of us, anytime it wants to, which tells us that this is not our government. Just my thoughts. I'm not speaking for Walter. But go ahead, Walter. Tell us more.
Well, a point in history which we're passing now is the peak of DEI. Seems to be by now, for a long time, there were certain people who you remember what Tulsi Gabbard said, that the Democrat Party has become anti-white. And she was, like the only person who had the courage to say it publicly.
I concur. But, I give her a lot of credit for that, too. I do.
Yeah. So an insult which has been flung rather in recent years rather often would be to say, the system is systemically racist. The thing with the documentary evidence shows that anti-white racism actually was quite real in the case of the Port Chicago explosion. And these young black men from Chicago, Illinois. So this is one of the quirks, coincidences that Chicago, Illinois is more than 1,000 miles away.
But
they set
Port
up
Chicago.
Daisy Herndon's book is the one which goes into this in depth. She is African American, and that's how she sort of got involved with this research topic through a side door, you could say, because her original interest was in the profound racial dimension of this. And she started corresponding with Peter Vogel until 2018 or so. And she's the only person to have that, to say that she spoke to Peter Vogel.
Do you have any of those letters or correspondence between Peter and and Daisy?
No.
All right. Let me go back, if I might, to this is important, the newspaper in Napa. You went through, I guess you contacted them, but their descriptions were, I guess the newspapers are still online now, probably digitized, and you can find them. But they did describe the night became as if it were high noon, broad daylight.
Yep.
That's extraordinary.
And a thing which I haven't seen anyone else mention, but I think is very interesting. There used to be a little industrial town called Port Chicago. There was a steelworks or something or other. It's not there anymore.
Uh-huh.
But and there were no fatalities in the town. So there was a movie theater which at 10:17 p.m., which was full of people, and the roof collapsed, but it did so in a way that all those people got out in time. And there was also a local a Port Chicago newspaper, or Contra Costa County of California, which mentions that same thing. You know, it was just a quiet night, and there was this blinding white light.
And the movie theater's ceiling collapsed. And how many miles away from Ground Zero might that have been? Give me a guesstimate on that.
Maybe 1.5 miles.
Okay.
So the same article mentions that the next thing that happened was the chunks of metal started falling from the sky. And no one at the town of Port Chicago was killed by it. There were some injuries, but no one was killed. And as you mentioned, we know which of those two ships that were being loaded with munitions exploded. So the bomb was brought from Los Alamos via rail to Port Chicago. There was a rail line which went right up to the wharf.
Right.
And it's in the historic record that they had upgraded the cranes used at Port Chicago because the bomb was so heavy, the existing cranes there were not strong enough. But that, just by coincidence, that upgrade had taken place just before the blast happened.
Yeah.
But the people said that chunks of metal started falling down from the sky, and that would have been the hull and superstructure of one of the ships, which the bomb was in the hold of the ship. But the next thing that happens, which I think is very interesting, some of the munitions starting falling from the sky, and they started falling over the streets of Port Chicago. I'm thinking of the movie version of this, so I think you would want to use this. But it was later estimated by the Navy to have been the most powerful explosion in the history of North America. Okay, we let that sink in for a moment. It was the most powerful explosion in the history of North America until a year later when the plutonium bomb went off in New Mexico. But the local newspaper mentioned that none of those munitions, there's a variety of munitions which were being loaded. There were some torpedoes and armor-piercing shells, all kinds of stuff. There's a variety going off to the Pacific War, but none of them exploded. None of them exploded. So this, if you go to...
So they were coming down intact. Boom, boom. Heavy. 20, 30 pounds each, maybe more. In terms of torpedoes, falling down all over the place.
None of them exploded. So for those kind of munitions which haven't been armed yet, they might burn, but they won't explode. And, you know, that's I think, one of the most...
Well, that right there rules out their lie. It tears their cover up to shreds. It couldn't have happened.
Yes. That's why I get a little hot under the collar whenever I see that. And every
Absolutely.
Other book except Peter Vogels will say that. And Dave Kern.
Anything else, any follow-ups at that newspaper archive? Were you able to discern or discover anything else there at that Napa newspaper? Or the Port Chicago little newspaper, too, for that matter? I'm sure it was still printing afterwards to some degree. Unless everything was obliterated. I don't know.
No, that's really all I know about it.
Well, that's really interesting. Is Daisy still with us?
I'm not sure. She was posting to social media up until 2019. She's a native of North Carolina. She says there's a YouTube video of her, which you can see in my 2025 edition. There's a Daisy Herndon chapter, which is still a work in progress. Oh, and I need to mention that there's the companion website to the book is atomicsecrets.org, and there's a hyphen between the two words. So it's atomic-secrets.org. And it's kind of interesting that Google search still is not picking it up. And usually, you know, enough time has gone by, so maybe I'm on a list somewhere already.
Oh, but, yeah, they're watching, they're listening. Sure.
Well, you remember that? I remember the first of these programs we did. We had one of these audio cutouts, which lasted a minute or so, and then it came back. And those who are longtime fans of yours know that it happens sometimes, not frequently, but it seems to correspond with something. There must be some U.S. Government employee whose only job is listening to every single one of your programs, and they've got to
in real time. And it almost, when these dropouts happen, they often happen with Erica when we're reporting on the COVID bioweapon, et cetera, bioweapons, plural. There's the virus and then there's the injection. But it almost happens every time when there's something of substance that is being discussed.
Yes.
Not frivolous,
yes,
not...
Go ahead. That was the point I was making, that someone with their finger on the panic button pushed it during our first discussion.
Well, I would actually expect it. That's how much control we live in under. So, yes. I hope Daisy is still there. I hope she finds out about this. I'm sure she will. And reads your book, and I hope she reaches out to you if she is still with us. And let's hope so. That was very kind of you to put a chapter in there about her. She certainly deserves it.
She most certainly deserves it. And as I mentioned, there's some overlap with Peter Vogel's, but the part about FDR being on hand to watch the slaughter, that's uniquely hers. So let's see. The next step for this book, I think, is that I'm not going to try to find a publisher to publish it, and it's just a PDF, so it's not really an ebook, and there isn't, even this today, there isn't any good way of converting a PDF to something you could have as a Kindle book, for example, or Barnes & Noble, a real ebook, which is a format called EPUB 3, which okay. I'm sure most of your fans are going to think is about as interesting as watching the paint drying on the walls. However, mm-hmm. these things are foundational to self-publishing, and self-publishing, of course, is our bulwark against overweening government censorship. So I think the next step for me is a Patreon site, which I'll be activating tomorrow, but it's a little too early tonight to say anything about that. But that's my hope for maybe getting a little funding for the next step of this, which might be outsourcing the conversion to a real ebook to someone who is, I may not be autistic enough, and I might die of boredom with all the handcrafting involved with that.
All right. But right now, you all may read it for free. The Last Wave from Port Chicago. It's one of a kind. It really ought to be nominated for revealing history as it really was, certainly revealing the evidence pointing to history as it really was, which is a very profound amount. Daisy Herndon's book is still available too, is it, on Amazon?
Oh, yes. Is that, you can get it from Amazon and Barnes & Noble, no problem. So it's the polar opposite of Last Wave from Port Chicago. It's very easy to download it, and Last Wave from Port Chicago was extraordinarily difficult until now.
Were there any... Now, there were other newspapers in San Francisco Bay and the surrounding communities. Did any of those come forth with any information? Have you been able to contact them and ask for a search of their archives for 1944 and the blast date stories thereafter? That's another thing you haven't had time to do yet, but this is such a big story. It's huge.
There was a seven-part series of articles from one of those newspapers, which is available.
Seven parts? Seven parts? All right.
Yes, it was pretty thorough, but it in many places it makes reference to Peter Vogel's, you know, work. And if you're not looking at my website, all of those links are defunct. Yeah, I could maybe look that up and forward that to you. But, what was I going to mention? A recent addition to my 2025 edition is the back cover. Did you have a chance to look at that, Jeff?
Not yet.
Well, it's if you just go to the last back cover on either of those...
Okay, hold on, I will. I'm going to pull up the 3D flip book, which is pretty neat.
Very good.
And scroll down the left side to the back cover.
I did see that.
You sent me that. I believe you sent me that. That's a terrific image. How did you do that? That has to be AI, right?
It's one of these things created by AI. I didn't do it. I didn't have to. But the person who created that was a real artist, you know?
Yeah.
The nuances, and it's the Port Chicago explosion. You can see because the sailors are African Americans, all but one, but only two-thirds. So it's, I didn't create this, and I didn't have to pay for it. And it's perfect. The color scheme even matches the front cover. Looking at it now, I just can't believe how good this is. So the way I got it, it was that I did a Google Images search on, Port Chicago explosion or something, and this came up. And so there's a link which says go to website. So, okay, I tried to go to the website, and it's the website of the U.S. government, Port Chicago Memorial, and it doesn't appear anywhere on their website. So I'm using it. You know, there's no copyright notice or anything. So I got
it's a terrific picture. The only thing I noticed that may be not right is that there are three warships pictured, not just two.
Yeah, and they're not freighters. They don't look like they're freighters. So
no, the one on the far left looks like a cruiser of some kind.
Yeah.
And then the one that this may potentially be AI. AI will do something sometimes on its own. And by the way, the ship that had the bomb placed in its hold before detonation, there was virtually nothing left of the ship. It was completely obliterated. There was nothing there.
Yes.
Nothing.
That's what the chunks of metal raining down on the town of Port Chicago, that would have been. Yeah.
The ship and ordnance. Okay, gotcha.
And you show up on the acknowledgement page, which is
I want to thank you for that. I did see that. Thank you very kindly for that. I'm very honored to be able to play a little tiny role in this to help bring this piece of truth, history, to the American people and to the world. This government detonated an atomic bomb in 1944, 1 year before the Trinity test in New Mexico, and killed over 300 soldiers, well, sailors, military personnel at the dock, most of whom were black. They were considered expendable. This is a huge story, and it has been successfully virtually eradicated. I think they got to the point where they were so pleased with how far they had gone in terms of removing the story from public access that they kind of quit. They just kind of stopped, and that's how these things were still available, some of the things, anyway, that you found, or that Peter Vogel found.
And the very last paragraph is the dedication, and if you don't mind, it's just one sentence, and I'd like to read it.
Please.
I say, all of my works are dedicated to my father, Walter J. Wilkinson, who was, among many other things, a veteran of the Solomon Islands campaign of World War II with the 1st Marine Division. Thank you, Father, wherever you are. So I said what I wanted to.
Very nice. No, that's very nice. And another hero. Obviously, those men who fought that island hopping campaign, just super, super people, and many of them didn't come home.
My father's father died quite young, so my father had to be the man of the family at a young age. And he was a U.S. Marine, but he was also really devoted to his mother, and he wrote many letters to her. And one of the artifacts I have of his service in the Solomon Islands was that he was sent a one-page, how would you say, commemoration, a certificate of completion, which is yellowing from age. And he had sent that to his mother, and it shows that he was with the 1st Marine Division, was the first, at least in the Marines, the first U.S. forces to receive jungle warfare training, which happened in Panama. And there's a movie with a very famous director, Terrence Malick, which was called The Thin Red Line, not to be confused with His Thin Blue Line, which was an excellent documentary about Texas.
Right.
But in The Thin Red Line, Guadalcanal is pictured as a tropical paradise, and it was not. There was an explosion, population explosion of land crabs because of all the corpses. And when my father was there, they would crawl into your sleeping bag, and you know, you would be awakened by a land crab in your sleeping bag trying to rip off some of your flesh.
Weren't these rather large crabs, as in frighteningly large, some of them, on some of the islands? I know there was one island that was investigated as a possible place that Amelia Earhart ended up, and these things were like two feet in diameter or something. These were horrible crabs. They were like science fiction movie crabs.
Yeah.
At any rate, I understand. The Solomon Islands. Go ahead.
Well, which was, as anyone who studies World War II knows, the naval battle of Midway Island was a turning point. It was a triumph for the U.S. Navy. But the first land offensive was the Guadalcanal or Solomon Islands campaign. And the Japanese misjudged Americans in a number of really important ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it came as a tremendous shock to them that there was a land assault on Guadalcanal. So another thing which I find interesting is that the Japanese culture, we think of an island nation, and it is a seagoing nation, but apparently the ancient origins of Japanese culture is a forest culture going back to Neolithic times or something. And the world's oldest theatrical tradition is called no, and it's the traditional actors are playing forest spirits, basically.
Right.
And in places like Guadalcanal, the Japanese soldiers would write back to their mothers and say, oh, they're feeding us very well here. We have fresh bamboo shoots every day, which is a delicacy in Japan. Because they were a forest culture, the Japanese knew that anything a monkey can eat, a human being can eat. And there are some monkeys in Japan. They love to luxuriate in the volcanic hot springs. So the Japanese soldiers would observe the monkeys and see what they were eating, and the American soldiers would shoot them out of the trees and roast them.
All right. By the way, if I can, let me just direct all of you who are interested in Amelia Earhart on the Solomon Islands, where she apparently ended up. There's some very interesting material on the right-hand side of the homepage. Look for Amelia's picture. It says Amelia Earhart Mystery Solved. Look down there and look at some of the pictures that are there. There's a photo of her sitting on a dock. Fred Noonan is standing up to her left as we look at the picture. It's obviously them. They were there. Local natives with them on a dock. And Japanese had taken control of the islands. And it's thought that she might have been, along with Noonan, taken away to another island, Saipan, I believe. At any rate, there's some phenomenal material there about Amelia Earhart. Now, the book and its free read status are going to go on for, a couple more days? I'll keep the link up there. And you hopefully get your Patreon set up.
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure where this is going. What's going to happen? It was to get it to this stage of completion was frankly rather hard work. And the next phase is what happens next? I'm not sure.
Well, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done. This is a great story. On behalf of Peter Vogel, I'll thank you as well, even though you probably never hear from him. Maybe you will. Who knows? The book is available to be read free. It's The Last Wave from Port Chicago, written by Peter Vogel and updated and represented just beautifully by Walter Wilkinson. Thank you, my friend. We'll be in touch. You take care.
Okay. Okay. Bye now.
Good night, Walter. And on the right-hand side of the homepage as well is a Walter Wilkinson session where you can hear our earlier programs for much more information as well. Okay, that's pretty neat. Back in just a few minutes. Hold on.